and Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief from The Advocate, has promised his Thursday visit. He's here. Much to talk about with Mark. And we've had several listeners chime in about the change of name for the Troy Middleton Library at LSU, your alma mater, my alma mater. I see Daryl Papillon, the exceptional attorney who is an occasional guest on this show, has an op-ed piece in The Advocate today in which he states that Middleton's name's got to go. What's your take on whether this will be a searing issue or will it go away in a few days, Mark Ballard?
It's probably going to hang around for a while. Underneath his opinion piece was one by Troy Middleton's grandson, but anyone with it shares the same name, arguing the other way. I think it's going to be hanging around for some time. They both make the point, however, that the bigger issue is, are we going to get a new library, one that doesn't leak when it rains? And that's way off into the future.
Yeah, and the library was likely to be moved or altered significantly.
Oh, no. It's to be moved. There are actual plans. They wanted to start the process in this capital outlay session, in this session, but they got their request was spiked. And they would be moving it down to near where the ROTC building is, where the cannons right. are.
Well, we have the building where I lived for 2.5 years as a student, Kirby Smith Hall, named after a Confederate general. And why isn't that name being taken off the building?
I think they're looking at that right now. We have one of our reporters going through and trying to find it. But I spoke to the interim president, and he said that they're trying to, they're going down the list and trying to figure out the connections of all of them. Kirby Smith was scheduled to be torn down, but with the COVID-19, they need to keep it for a while longer. And so it was going to get torn down sometime this year, but it will not now. And so they're looking at Beauregard Hall. I mean, there's a number of places that have Confederate names attached to them.
Well, it's an issue that is in our midst and will be for some time, and it in many ways started with Mitch Landrieu's removal of statues in New Orleans, and history will view Landrieu as a progressive on this, and other cities have followed suit.
I think that it really started with that church shooting by the white supremacist in Charleston.
And, 5 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, and of which Mitch Landrieu was in that sort of wave that said, these names, these statues are offensive to a large part of our population.
Well, Middleton's, it's his grandson, right? Troy Middleton IV. He writes in today's Advocate, in 1966, General Middleton received the Louisiana Association of Broadcasters Louisiana of the Year Award for his accomplishment in racial peacekeeping. Now, this is a state, Mark, you know it, I know it. In 1948, it went for Strom Thurmond over Thomas Dewey and Harry Truman in the presidential election. Thurmond had one issue, segregation. 1968, it went for George Wallace over Hubert Humphrey, Richard Nixon. Wallace had basically one issue, segregation. So Troy Middleton was not the only person in Louisiana who held these views in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and maybe even today.
Right. But there's one thing that we never quite did, and it's come to grips with what the slavery and the rationale for enslaving a certain group of people and how it has impacted our political thought processes and our personal thought processes over the year through Jim Crow and that sort of thing. You and I are old enough to remember segregated water fountains and segregated facilities. So it's not been that long ago. I would like to think it's not that long ago.
They bricked up the swimming pool at City Park to keep blacks and whites from swimming together about 50 years ago.
And I've walked over that and explained it to my children, who look at me quizzically like, really, what? This was a swimming pool, first off. This was a swimming pool, and why did they do that again? So there have been lots of changes, but one thing that we haven't done is really kind of come to grips with our history.
No, we haven't, and race often takes a place at the front of issues. It's sometimes said, sometimes unsaid, but When we just turned the clock back 29 years, David Ernest Duke received over 671,000 votes for governor of Louisiana. And a lot of those folks still live in Louisiana, Mark.
Indeed. Indeed. I mean, and not just Louisiana, but throughout the South and really throughout the North. When I was in New York, I saw a lot of the same. I recognized a lot of the same behaviors.
877-217-5757. We'll spend the rest of the hour with Mark Ballard, the erudite and enlightened one at the Capitol, who's been following what's going on. We are in the middle of a special session. The governor of Louisiana pulled out his veto pen. And, Mark, in the last minute before we go to the break, was there a surprise at all that the governor vetoed the so-called insurance reform measure?
Not at all. Not at all. That was well expected because of the problems with the bill.
And is there possibly a compromise in the offing?
Well, I'm certainly trying my best to find that out, but it looks to me like there are. They have been meeting, and it looks like they are basically going to be going with the speaker's bill, which is a little less, the word for it, it's not quite as what the insurance companies are looking for, but it is a step towards their direction. And that looks like the bill that they're going to be going with now.
And the governor may be able to live with that one?
Yeah, we're under the impression, in the hints, because the governor is not volunteering this, but from what we hear from the people that are around him, that these are the kind of measures.
We'll continue in just a moment. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. As we left for the break, Mark Ballard was explaining that the governor and lawmakers are trying to work this out. The governor, of course, is a Democrat in a Republican-controlled legislature, and that's putting it mildly. He's got the weakest hand for a Louisiana governor since David Connor Treen was governor of our state from 1980 to 1984 and had an overwhelmingly Democratic legislature. And, of course, this is a case in which John Bel Edwards is not running for re-election. He said on his show yesterday that he would not rule out, he certainly didn't make an announcement, would not rule out running for the highest office in the land at some point, and would not rule out considering a cabinet position. And you can only imagine if Joe Biden wins the election, John Bel Edwards will be one of those people who quite possibly will be in line for a cabinet position if he wants one. I would think, though, that Democrats would be reluctant to remove him because, Mark, they know what would happen. We would have Republican Billy Nungesser as governor of Louisiana.
Right, we would. He would take over. But Lieutenant Governor Nungesser is not as conservative as, say, Attorney General Jeff Landry or U.S. Senator John Kennedy. So that may be, the better choice.
Well, yeah, if Democrats are looking for the best Republican that they, Democrats, can work with, obviously Nungesser would be better for Democrats than Landry or Kennedy. Now, yesterday, the Louisiana Civil Law and Procedure Committee in the House voted 9-7, killing legislation that would roll back the legal doctrine that protects police officers from lawsuits alleging abuse. It's a key priority for many demonstrators who've turned out in huge numbers across the country to protest brutality in the wake of George Floyd's death in Minneapolis. Your thoughts about the 9-7 vote against this measure yesterday that kills it in the House Civil Law Committee?
Well, we were expecting a party line vote on this, based on just what people had been talking about. But you did have two Republicans that crossed over and voted with the Democrats on House Civil Law. The bill does track what other legislatures around the country are doing, and that is to lessen, to relieve, to remove this limited immunity that that police have in cases in which abuse has been alleged. And these are civil cases looking for damages.
And the governor signed some pro-gun rights bills. He's gotten some grief for it from his base, but yesterday he explained that these are not as sweeping as some fear. What are your thoughts?
Well, he is, there is one sweeping bill, and that basically is the one that invalidates the local and parish, the municipal and parish ordinances against guns in specific locations, like the Breck Parks, for instance. You're not supposed to be carrying a gun and come into one of those Breck Parks, but come August the 1st, that ordinance will be removed. But the other two are not quite as sweeping in that the pistol packing for church is that basically was not as strong as it was at the very beginning of it as it was going in, which meant that you could basically carry a gun into a church without anyone knowing. They stripped away the law, and it is Cleo Fields, Senator Cleo Fields from Baton Rouge, came up with this, and he went ahead and stripped away the law that the supporters of this rule wanted to see stripped away, but then added wording in that basically put it back in, that you basically have to go to the whoever's in charge of the church and ask for their permission before you carry the gun. And then the third one involves allowing the sale of guns and ammunition during a state of emergency. And so that's, during a state of an emergency, that is very limited as well.
One of the front page stories in Wednesday's Advocate from Sam Carlin, tax breaks sought by business executives amid the recovery from the coronavirus have started to hit resistance at the Capitol. Governor Edwards has vetoed one measure to expand an incentive program, and Democrats in the legislature are doing their best to stall an effort to suspend franchise taxes for some businesses. Your look at this, what do you think?
Read Sunday's paper. We're going to have an extensive story about that. But basically, the Republicans and business community have filed a sweeping number of bills that would allow tax breaks for all sorts of industries on the theory that this will help them get back into business after the coronavirus. The Democrats are saying, but what about regular people? They also were on the front lines, and they've been able to slow some of them, but not all of them. We're likely to see that franchise tax suspension again. There was a Senate bill that did the same thing.
We are in the phase two comeback from the shutdown by the governor on March 16th, the stay-at-home order, and it's a case in which if you look out your window and you're on a busy thoroughfare, you're going to see a lot of cars, a lot of people doing their things. And recently guests have come in here and they're shaking hands again. And that's a no-no, but we're still doing it. We are creatures of habit. But we're going to have live music now. Mark, are you going to be out and about celebrating this expansion of Phase 2?
And we're fixing to go into phase three in I guess, a week or so. And whatever that means, I'm not sure, because what I have seen is what you have seen is that, basically we've given up with, wearing masks and gloves and shaking hands and hugs and all of that kind of stuff seem to have come back in great fervor. And, I'm not sure what phase three will do that'll make it different. The other thing, though, that you want to keep in mind is that there have been spikes in the increase in number of COVID-19 cases since we started down the road since the first of the phase one. And I'd be interested to see, how that is going to impact our reopening, our continuing reopening.
Well, a question that a listener got into Matt Watson just as he was leaving about the Supreme Court decision this week, on protection of gay people in the workplace, saying the Metro Council has a civil rights ordinance ready to go. This question is from Jennifer Harding. Would provide the same protections in the case of housing and public accommodation at the local level. And, of course, the governor has been involved in a fracas with the attorney general on this regarding his executive order. What happens on the state and city levels based on the Supreme Court decision this week?
Well, they're still trying to sort that out because the governor did have an executive order that was challenged by Jeff Landry and the First Circuit, a Republican majority on the First Circuit, upheld the lower court ruling saying that the governor had gone too far. The governor has released released a statement saying that, you know, that he was right all along. And so I imagine we'll see that order coming back out, and we may even see bills, not this session, but in coming sessions, that will put the governor's executive order into state law.
Yesterday on this show, we had State Senator Katrina Jackson. It's her bill, the bill that requires admitting privileges for doctors who perform abortions. The Supreme Court of the United States could rule on this any day. It could be today, as a matter of fact. Mark, what implications does this have for our state?
Well, it would basically shut down all but one of the abortion clinics, I mean, as it stands now. And that is basically they have to be within a certain amount of time. They have to have admitting privileges in two particular hospitals. A lot of our hospitals are associated with the Catholic Church and will not give admitting privileges. Other hospitals want to avoid this issue at all costs, and they kind of slow down. They slow walk the admitting privileges. But right now there's only one doctor that would qualify. So that would mean, and this is where the decision is going to come out, that would mean that there would be only one clinic in the state that would have to do, and so people wanting to do that would have to drive 3-4 hours. And then the question would be, is that reasonable?
Tom on Bluebonnet asked about, has anyone found the John McDonough statue that was thrown in the river over the weekend in New Orleans?
I kind of heard that. I don't know the answer, but I kind of heard the talk that they may have, but I just don't know.
Well, and he also asks, is Andrew Jackson next? After all, he did own slaves. Are we going to see the end of Jackson Square?
It's possible. I know that they've put police guards around that statue because there's been kind of threats on it. So, that is possible as well.
You know, that same statue, almost identical, same sculptor, is outside the White House. Andrew
Jackson. In Lafayette Park, it
is
indeed.
The only U.S. president to have a statue at the White House is Andrew Jackson, number 7 on the honor roll, and a man that the current president admires. Unlike the current president, he liked to fight in wars.
Indeed. But there's a lot of parallels to Jackson and President Trump as far as the kind of this sort of populist demagoguery that they practice.
There are, and it's funny because if Trump leaves, Joe Biden's not the guy full of pizzazz that Trump is, and right now the betting money is on Biden, but Jackson's successor,
John Martin, Quincy.
No, well, I think it was
Martin Van Buren.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right.
How much do we know about Martin Van Buren? Mark, always great to talk with you. We'll call next Thursday. Keep going. Be safe.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support.